Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most. Happy New Year. We're going to jump into this interview with a new artist for the new year. Say hello to Cat Ivy.
Hello.
You're like, I don't know. Let me say hello. Hold on. Our studio audience wants to say hello. Oh, they love you. What a warm welcome for 2020.
Thank you.
Did you do anything fun for New Year's?
You know, nothing too crazy. My family decided that they were going to throw a party to celebrate the new decade.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It was really fun, really chill, but it was a lot of fun.
I was an old man. I was at home by 9 o'clock because everybody in my neighborhood lights up fireworks, and Otis goes crazy with fireworks. So I know 4th of July and January or December 31st, I'm going to be at home just to make sure he's cool. So happy 2020, though.
Thank you. You too.
I've got a good feeling about this year. It's just always got a good vibe, and excited to have you on the show to jumpstart our, I think it's our 6th or 7th season now.
That's awesome. Wow. I'm so honored.
Yeah. You know what? I love actually interviewing new artists because it takes me back to that place when I first started. You know, it's like it's such a new frontier, all of this, you know, the radio, doing records, writing songs, and it never gets old. Like, I always love the process. So tell me about your songwriting process and what made you first want to be an artist.
Interestingly enough, it was another artist. I was 10, and for a reason I'm not going to get into now, I had a MySpace, and I just happened to have found Taylor Swift on MySpace just after she released her first album, and I heard our song, and I thought, I could do that.
Like, wait a minute, I could do that.
Yeah, and I was just the thought just occurred to me, and then I found out more that she, you know, wrote these lyrics in her diary on her bedroom floor, and I was like, I don't write lyrics.
You're like, I already do that.
Yeah, like, I don't write lyrics, but I guess I could. And I've never kept a diary consistently my entire life, especially up until that point. But even now, it just doesn't happen.
Well, it's like homework. Yeah. It's so difficult to do that.
And it, but I did find that once I actually started writing songs, I was willing to put in the work, and so I would write a lot. And they were awful, as all
the first
songs
ones always are.
Are
just not good. It's and they're very like. I think they're obvious. They're very obvious. There's nothing deep about them. It's very surface.
I remember one lyric. The only lyric that I can remember from like those early songs is it's with my friends I know how to have fun.
Hey, that's not bad. That's not bad.
That's all I remember.
You know what? You could make money on that song now. You never know. That could be a big hit. You know,
one
you
day.
Never know.
Yeah, I have to write the song now.
And were you taking like music classes as a kid? Were you singing in a chorus?
I actually quit all of my music lessons, but it wasn't me. It was my parents. They made me quit.
Aha.
I just was unwilling to practice.
We have Dad in the studio right now, so we can ask him to verify that.
I was just unwilling to practice. Because back then, especially, they started me on piano when I was 7. And I really liked to play. I liked the whole aesthetic, but I didn't like to warm up. I didn't want to play the scales. I just wanted to play the songs, and I didn't want to play them badly.
Right.
So every time I would get homework to do, I'd be like, I'm not going to waste my time playing wrong for a week. I'm just going to learn it in the lesson, and then I'll never play wrong
And
again.
Did you start with classical music, or were you doing, like,
I was
pop
doing,
tunes?
Like, the kid books that they teach you how to play. Yep. So it's all like basic. It's nothing complicated or anything like that. But the more I noticed, the more that I started playing songs from like The Sound of Music, because I had a beginner's book for that, the more I actually enjoyed it because I got to sing along. Like, there was interaction. But they made me quit because I wasn't practicing enough. And then I found Taylor Swift and I wanted to learn how to play the guitar. So they let me learn how to play the guitar. And I did not get far because, again, did not want to practice. But I would sit with the guitar in my room at all hours of the night. And I would play along with her songs. And any chords that I couldn't play, I just skipped.
She's like, I'll come back to that.
Yeah. Or I like substituted another chord in there.
Well, that's even advanced just to do that. That's crazy.
It was out of the key.
Okay. All right. Well, that's not good.
Didn't know anything.
We don't like that.
Yeah. Didn't know anything, but it sounded, I mean, I can't ever remember being like, oh, that sounded awful.
Right.
We're not going to do that. So it taught me a lot about song form, and I didn't know that that's what I was learning. I just thought I was singing Taylor Swift songs. But then I started taking my lyrics and I started writing them on top of her or the chords that I was using.
Oh, that's smart. Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I just kind of started making my own thing.
Right.
And so I had no idea about song form. I did not take lessons. I did not know the first
Well,
thing.
I mean, you were really, you were like 10, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who's doing songwriting lessons at 10?
But I knew there was a verse, like a chorus, another verse, a bridge, and then a chorus.
That's
and I'm
smart.
Like, I can do it.
I started with classical music on piano, and I was not into it because I was already doing classical music with singing.
Yeah.
So I quit too, just because I was like, I'm not falling in love with this. And the Beatles brought me back.
Nice.
And now it's funny. It's so funny you bring up practicing. It's such a great, you know, topic because I used to hate practicing.
Yep.
I never liked doing it, and now it's the one thing I look forward to more than anything music related.
Oh yeah.
I just love it.
Rehearsals.
Yeah,
those
yeah,
are
me
my
too.
Are, like,
me too.
Even better than the show sometimes.
Yes, yes, they usually are.
Things.
They usually are.
You get to try things. It doesn't matter. There's no pressure. There's no like you're not trying to please anybody. You're literally just trying to find what's interesting or what you like, and that's I love.
Well, that's such a shift from when you're like, okay, I got to put in an hour a week or 2 hours a week, and it's like it becomes painful. It's like homework. It's like homework.
My parents wanted me to do 30 minutes every day.
Oh, see, that's good. That's really good. You know what I tell students? I say, do 5 minutes a day.
Oh, that's better.
Because 5 minutes a day, like, you know, I never used to practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started picking up the guitar 5 minutes a day. You do 5 minutes a day over 20 years.
Right.
You get good.
It adds up.
Yeah. It's better than doing 6 hours in a week for 3 years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy because your brain processes the information a little bit better. I actually think practicing is kind of weird because you work on the music, you go to bed, you pick up the instrument the next day, and you're better. Like your brain is processing the information. So I look forward to that now. It's like now things make more sense. So I love hearing that you hated practicing. Now I don't feel alone because some people practice obnoxiously and it just is crazy to me.
Right. Well, then I turned into one of those people. I find that like I tend to be somebody who goes from one extreme to the other extreme, and then I find the middle.
Right.
And so when I got to the place where I'm at now, it took, I mean, it was 15 years before I learned how to relax into the style of practicing that I like.
Right.
Where it's just, it's less of the grind and it's more of the experimentation, but you're still putting in the work.
And did you grow up around here?
I did.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school in Woodland Hills, California.
Okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. Was there a good music program in the schools? Was it like a chorus or an orchestra or anything like that?
Yeah, there was. It was a chorus. They used to perform competitively, but when I went, they weren't. But it really taught me a lot about harmony and about the relationship in between there. And it was during high school that I ended up releasing an EP of my own.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You released your first EP in high school?
I was 16.
Wow, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been difficult.
It was and it wasn't. Because I was working in entertainment and I was going on auditions for acting and for film and TV.
Right.
And I just got really tired of having everybody tell me no.
Right.
And that was the reason why I couldn't do anything. And I thought, like, if I could just get the book the part, and get the job, I would be the best person for the job no matter what.
Right.
I would do the best job ever. But nobody ever gave me that opportunity, and I said, like, forget this. I'm going to do my own thing. And I had already started training with a singing coach and a performance coach, and so I had kind of developed a really, I mean, it was an insane work ethic, but over 4 years, I mean, it got me the voice that I had.
And it's also the time that you're putting in, mm-hmm. also with your age, because yep. your voice is developing,
right.
and it's going through changes. Mm-hmm. Male voices do the same thing, except for the first couple of years, there's no voice because it drops.
Yeah.
But, you know, isn't it funny how there's so many gatekeepers
yeah.
that are telling you yes, no.
Right.
It continues to be like that until you put the power in your hands, which you learned
mm-hmm.
by writing your own songs,
yep.
making your own records, and making your impact and creating a following like you're doing.
Right, and I ended up having a connection with a producer. His name is Linus of Hollywood. He works with Bowling for Soup a lot. And that was kind of the sound that I was going for at the time. So I'm like, oh, this is perfect. And Taylor Swift was kind of, I've watched her career really closely because of that and because of how she started. And
she started in country, right?
She did. But she had, by that point, I believe she had started moving more into like a pop, country, rock
right.
thing. And that was really where I wanted to be, maybe a little bit less country, but still, I listened to a lot of country in high school. It was country and jazz. That was like
whoa,
what I was
really?
Listening to. Yeah.
I was not exposed to jazz really until I was in maybe my junior year mm-hmm. year of high school. Like really, like Miles Davis, Cannonball
yeah.
Adderley.
Well, really then, yeah, but I'm more like, I guess the American Songbook, I was really listening to that and listening to Ella Fitzgerald covers and just so involved in that world.
Wow.
Because of what I was doing in the choir, that, like, I just had so many different influences. And the Beatles have also been a really big influence of mine. I feel like they're an influence for the
country. That's crazy.
Country.
Fun fact, I saw Ella Fitzgerald perform at the Hollywood Bowl when I was
that's
a kid.
Insane.
I must have been 11 years old, 10
oh my
years
gosh,
old.
That's so cool.
And you know what? I remember the hush of the people in the audience when she came out, when she was announced. I remember that more than what she was singing, because she was an older singer
yeah.
at that point, but I just remember everybody going, oh, like, I was like, oh, she must be this important legend
mm-hmm.
that I don't know about because I'm 10 years old, you know?
Right.
So, but it was pretty, like, powerful just to have that experience.
That's insane.
She's amazing. She is amazing. So let's jump into a song.
Yeah.
What are you going to sing for us first?
So this song is actually off of my first EP. It's called One Voice.
The one you did in high school?
The one I did in high
awesome.
School.
Awesome. I like that.
Yeah. I don't really play them in my sets when I play around town, but
why not?
I don't know. I think it got that because I released it when I was 16 and I'm older now. I look back on it and I'm like, oh my goodness, my writing is so different now. I love what I'm doing now. And I forgot about this song until I was thinking about it the other day because in college, I entered it into a songwriting contest right after I decided to come back to music because I left for a little while. And I just kind of freaked out and thought that maybe it wasn't for me. And I entered it into a contest, and it actually got honorable mention in pop.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's insane, because I wrote this by myself when I was 16. I don't know how it made it onto the final release, but somehow it did.
That's fantastic.
And I'm so grateful for it.
Well, before you start this, I'm going to tell you something. As a songwriter, and I'm an old man as a songwriter, never turn your back on your songs, because they're like your kids.
Right.
You know, and it's like I've been in that place, especially in like my early 20s, mid 20s. Mm-hmm. I used to be like, oh, you know, I don't play those songs because that was on my first record. But now, as I look back at my life in music, I'm like so proud to play those songs
yeah.
because they placed the stepping stones
right.
for me to be in music.
Mm-hmm.
So now I find them to be even more special. So I'm going back and going to old songs and trying to breathe new life into them. So remember
awesome.
That. That's
I
on
will.
The house. That one's
I will.
On the house.
I appreciate it.
All right, what's the name of the song? One Voice?
One Voice.
All right, this is Cat Ivy with One Voice.
One voice, one voice.
Yeah, very nice. Our studio audience loves it. Very pop punky. I like it.
Yes.
I can tell you were listening to, let me think, it kind of sounds like a Dashboard Confessional. What's that band with the girl singer, Haley?
Oh, Paramore?
Paramore.
Yes, I was.
Yep. See? I know my stuff.
Yes, I was.
See, that's why I love, like, when songwriters start writing music, you can see their influences.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's something exciting about that because it's it's like, oh, this is the spark that kind of starts everything.
Yes.
So it's funny because I used to do that with my records too. I used to be like, oh, you know, that record was so long ago. This is the new record. Now I'm like, I look back and I'm like, no, every record is a part of my life. Every record is a part of who I am.
Right.
And if you don't like one of them, that's okay.
Right. But, and well, now that I'm starting to release music again, it's, I have so much more of an appreciation of my earlier stuff.
Right, right.
Because I know, like, I've been working on one song for 2.5 years, and I'm just about ready to release it, and it's scary. But I have such an appreciation because of that, of the journey and everything that had to fall in place for me to be able to actually finish and release something that took that long. Like, that's hard. That's terrifying. That's a literal, like, musical
child. Well,
Nick,
you can go down that rabbit hole where you're like, let's try this. Let's try, oh, it's not right. It needs to be this. So tell me, from making that record when you were 16 to working on this song for 2.5 years, what was the biggest thing or things that you learned in the process?
Well, first I had to get over a fear, because I got, right after we released the EP, I got scared that maybe this wasn't for me because I was really new at performing. I hadn't done it a lot, and I just felt so uncomfortable. And I had to step away from music and try to do something else for me to realize that I could not see myself doing anything else. And I just had to accept, one, that, you know, being a musician, being a singer-songwriter, being an artist was part of the life that I wanted, and have that be okay. Especially because in college, everybody wants you to go and get a traditional job and get an advanced degree. And I'm like, I don't have any desire to want to do this.
Right.
I don't care about grades except for the fact that I want to be I want to be the best.
Yes.
Like, that's,
I find, too, that you, when you do something you love, you want to be better than getting a good grade at something.
Right.
Because most people that study something and learn it for a test in 10 years or 5 years, they don't really hold on to that information, whereas musicians or artists, when they learn the craft, they want to just get so unbelievably consistent with being good that it actually shows like a higher sense of attention to detail and learning the process, which is a huge testament to the craft. It's like you got to love
the
craft, you know? So tell me, like, what did you do when you took a little break from music?
I moved out to D.C. and I went to school out there, and I...
Which school?
George Washington University.
Okay, all right.
And
very academic?
Very. But their music department has a partnership with the Kennedy Center. And so I used to go to operas for free because of the partnership. And I would sit there and I would listen to what they're doing. And I would, you know, get extra credit for going to these, I forget what they're called, but they have like performances, free performances every night. And I would get extra credit for going. And just seeing what other artists are doing and other groups. And
All in classical music or anything?
Anything.
Wow. Where was this? At the Kennedy Center?
At the Kennedy Center.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And it was right near campus. And I could walk there or I could take a shuttle. It didn't matter. I usually walk because it wasn't that far.
Wow.
But it was one of the... It reminded me about... Because it taught me how to be a student of music again.
Right.
And really a student of music. And I had to learn everything because I didn't study classical. I didn't study how to sing jazz.
Right.
I didn't study musical theater.
But when you see somebody that's good at it, it makes you want to learn the techniques and go back and like understand more of it, you know?
And it honestly, it saved me because we had practice rooms. And I would go there at like 2 o'clock in the morning because nobody else would be around. And so I didn't feel self-conscious about my own music. And I just wrote from like... Maybe I would leave at 2, but I would get there at like 12, and I would, from 12 to 2 in the morning, that was my time, and my mom hated it because I would walk across campus, and it's a city. The campus has no gate.
Right.
So like I'm walking downtown in a city at 12 o'clock at in the morning, I guess.
Wow.
That's
not safe.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't want to say that in front of dad.
It was like two blocks, so it worked out.
Well, you know, and it's like the funny thing too. It's like a lot of artists are night owls. Mm-hmm. Like I find that I come alive at night. That's when I'm doing most of my work. Right. That's when I'm doing most of my homework, practicing, writing. You know, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's the burning the midnight oil is just the super creative part of it, but it is.
Right. And I mean, but it saved my own writing because I kept writing.
And it brought you back in.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I was in a position just before I left for school where I had to find practice rooms because I wasn't where I was living. I wasn't able to play. There wasn't a piano available. And so I would sneak into other buildings around me and I would use their pianos.
Hmm.
And it really made me appreciate having
an instrument.
An instrument and access to one. And it kind of made me appreciate music even more.
Yeah.
And so the entire time I was living in D.C., I was just leading myself back to music, and I didn't know. I thought I was getting farther away from it, but the joke was on me. Luckily, because it's everything.
Yes.
I would never change.
Well, it's funny because it's like, you know, a lot of people that I used to sing with as a kid or, you know, make music with, they don't do it now. Right. And you can tell that they miss it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, it's never too late. Like, it never leaves you.
Right.
But you leave it.
That's right.
And it's like that I've learned, like, I never want that to be part of any part of my life. Like, mm-hmm. I just want more and more music in my life, more instruments, more opportunities to create.
Yeah.
And you have that now. Now you got the fire. You got the fire.
And the skills.
Yes, yes.
To be able to work with just about anybody.
So was the songwriting school, you were one of my students, one of my great students.
Oh, thanks.
When you came to the songwriting school, was it like eye-opening just to be around all these artists and songwriters and kind of, what or was it like old news?
Honestly, it was the first time I had ever understood that there was actually a process to songwriting. I kind of picked up all these skills that I had as I went, and I learned from other people, and I didn't realize that there was a central place where I could have access to everybody I would need to be able to release music or to learn about how to be an artist in Los Angeles and how to kind of jumpstart a career. I didn't know. And so when I got there, it was kind of like Disneyland. Like in every room, there was something magical happening, and I loved it.
You know, when I came to that school, I was like, this is... I grew up in Arcadia, so I was like right next to the school.
Right.
I was like, I didn't even know this existed, and this is like everything I've ever wanted mm-hmm. in a school, you know, because I went to a music school, and it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
But I had a songwriting teacher change my life, and it was everything. So you got the skills. Now you're making the music.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about this the studio track we're going to play right now.
So the studio track, actually, it's funny how... It happened. I was actually listening to a Sarah Bareilles record, her latest one called Amidst the Chaos, and on there, there's a specific song called Poetry of Dead Men, Poetry by Dead Men. And
you know, she's a friend of mine.
I do, and I...
She's awesome.
I went and saw her at the Hollywood Bowl, and
I wanted to go to that show, because I've seen her so many times. She's actually opened for me for years. And we still email all the time. The last thing I saw that she did was the Waitress musical.
Mm-hmm.
I promised her I would go see that. But I really wanted to see the Hollywood Bowl show, but I think it was on a night that I was doing music or a session, and it bummed me out because I think at 10 o'clock I was still like, well, maybe I can just go there for half the show, and it just was like, it's not going to work out. But I want to see her there.
She had T-Bone Burnett
play. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love him.
Uh-huh.
That's incredible. What song did they play on?
Orpheus.
Okay.
Yeah. It was great.
Rad.
It was so good. But I was listening to her record and actually challenged my way of thinking because I was like, this isn't the Sarah Bareilles that I've grown up with.
Right.
This isn't... I followed her career. This isn't... I'm obsessed with...
the first
Blessed
record?
The Blessed Unrest.
Okay, yeah.
Because of all the dissonance and the way that she plays with the harmonic tendencies. When I got back from school, that was really what I was into. And so I listened to that album. I mean, on my decades list, it was the most listened to album.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
It was
She's
more
so
than
great.
Taylor Swift
She's so
more
great.
Than everybody else.
She used to bring 200 people on a Friday night to a small club as an opener.
Wow.
And that's when I knew. I'm like, you're just going to shoot into superstardom. And then she got signed to Island, I think. And I remember she was like, she was frustrated with the first record. Mm-hmm. So I was emailing her. I'm like, oh my God, you got Matt Chamberlain on your record. You got all these are all the great studio cats that I wish I could get. And she was just like, yeah, I just made this record and my label, you know, said they want me to write a love song. And then she wrote Love Song. It was just like, oh, this is awesome. You know, so she's like one of the talents. And you know what? You're one of the new talents. Oh, thanks. So let's play this track. Yeah. This is called Meant to Be, Cat Ivy. Mm-hmm.
How are you? Is the last thing I remember from that moment. We started talking last December, I lost my mind. I barely knew my name, and now I find, even with time, nothing's changed. If I believed in fate, I'd say you were sent to me. You were sent to me. If I had faith, I'd say you were made for me. You were made for me. I don't know how I know. I don't know how I know. I don't know, I just know. We're meant to be. We're meant to be. I love you is the first thing you say to me in the mornings, and it's echoed by the leaves outside our bedroom. In our tiny warm apartment, even now I find being with you's like kindergarten. If I believed in fate, I'd say you were sent to me. You were sent to me. If I had faith, I'd say you were made for me. You were made for me. I don't know how I know. I don't know how I know. I don't know, I just know. We're meant to be. We're meant to be. If I had faith, I'd say you were made for me. You were made for me. I don't know how I know. I don't know how I know. I don't know, I just know. We're meant to be. We're meant to be. To be meant to be, meant to be, you and me.
Very nice, very nice. Studio audience is really warming up to you.
Thank you.
So the production was really sweet on that. It's Thank warm. You. You got some cool mm-hmm. sounds, and then you're strumming your guitar. Mm-hmm. Like, tell me what the hardest part of recording it was for you.
That I did it myself.
Ah, wow.
I did it all myself.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You did the mixing too?
No, thankfully.
Okay. You're like, I can't do that. No.
Yeah, no. One of my really good friends did that for me, but I did all the production myself.
Crazy. Good for you.
Thank you.
Did you fall in love with that process, or were you frustrated by the process?
I have a love-hate relationship with
Me too.
Producing. So it was nice that it didn't take so long.
Right.
It was nice that it all kind of came together pretty easily, but it was, I just get very overwhelmed by how many options there are. And I find, like, that's, I mean, that's probably one of the things that I had to learn the most, as you were asking earlier, is I had to be okay with having there be so many options that I could choose.
Right.
And being okay with the one that I choose and being okay with my choice. And that's kind of what Meant to Be is about, is really, like, if you, like, trust your gut, trust your instinct, because it's what's going to lead you to your truth, to what you want, to
give
who
me
you
chills.
Are.
You're giving me chills.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I think I've learned the most in 20 years of writing songs and making records. It's the instinct that gets cemented. It's like, you don't think, oh, does it need this? Does it, you know, it's like, the funny thing is this week I'm going back in the studio to make my eighth record, and it's the first record where, you know, I'm not concerned about what the radio promoters wanting us to sound like, or what A&Rs or any, it's like, no, we're just going to make this record because we've come through this long phase of making music and touring and being a band and going through losses and crazy stuff like that. And the one thing that I'm most excited about is the instinct that I now have as an artist to know when things are right and not caring about who wants this to sound a certain way. So it's like, always listen to that instinct being strengthened, because it's gonna, it is gonna guide you. You already know.
Yeah.
You're too young to know all this stuff. This is crazy. So what's next for you? Are you performing live? Are you making more recordings?
Yeah, so next I'm actually releasing a single, looks like around Valentine's Day, which I'm really excited about because it is a love song, so I figured why not?
Perfect.
It's actually the song that has taught me the most about songwriting ever.
Wow. Tell me how. Tell me how.
So the song's called Falling. I wrote it back in 2017. I workshopped the entire thing, because I didn't know what I was doing, but it was the first time I really believed in a song that I wrote, and I was like, wait, this could be something, like, what do I do with it? And everybody's like, just keep going, keep going. So I'm like, okay. And we moved some things around, and I got to a place, it was probably about halfway, and halfway of me working on it, but I didn't know. I thought I was done. I was like, I'm going into this workshop, this song is done, I don't know what else I could do. We did it. And I go in and I play it, and they go, so your chorus doesn't quite match the rest of the song, and I don't think it's saying what you want it to say.
And you're like, no!
Yeah, I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. I thought I was going to cry. Like, it was just, I put my heart and soul into this thing.
Right.
It was the first time I'd ever really believed in one of my songs like that. And I was the only writer on it. And I was like, wow. So they told me, Rob Seals, who is the owner of the Songwriting School, and
who I love, and who you love too, he's the best.
He's one of the most wonderful people. He's like, just take some time, go back, you know, give yourself some space, figure it out. And I did none of those things. I did not give myself any space. I did not give myself grace or time. I got in my car on my drive home, and I was like, I'm gonna figure this out. And within that week, I wrote 8 different choruses.
Wow.
Hated all of them. Walked in and was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. I have no idea what I'm going to do. And so the workshop, the room ended up picking the lines that they liked best. And then I kind of made that decision basically right there that that was the chorus. And I'm never working on this song again. Seriously.
You're like, I'm never going into surgery on this ever again.
I'm like, it's done. Like,
well, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And it's also exhausting kind of like, as much as you love creative choices to be judged by, we'll call it that.
Yep.
It's exhausting to hear because it's such a tender thing to write something vulnerable.
Right.
And when that gets judged, it's like the opposite of the strength of the vulnerability. So it is, you know, it comes back to that, you know, that instinct. Just like, you know what, this is what it should be. This is what I think it should be. And you'll come back to that always.
Yeah.
And going through that process strengthens that, because your real estate for what you want to say, how you want to say it, becomes more urgent.
Right.
And you learned that, obviously.
I did, and it honestly also taught me not to be so precious with my music. And so when I write a song, I think something that, a skill that I've gained and something that I'm really proud of is the willingness to go to the other extreme.
Right.
To have something that's like kind of not working, and to go to a completely extreme different place, obviously with a lot more care and respect for time and space and letting things sit and processing than I did then. But I get to go to the other side, and I end up finding something in between, and so I'm okay with rewriting. I'm okay with starting over. I'm okay with putting it up on the drawing board and, you know, getting out a new piece of paper and trying again and, you know, pulling what works and keeping what does and getting out what doesn't. I really know that it's all in service of what's best for the song. And now I know, and in producing it too, I've also had to come to a place where I'm okay with my own instinct being what I like, despite what other people, what feedback other people give me. I'll try them out just to see. Right. But ultimately, it's what I want. It's what I think is going to serve the song best. It's what I think is going to bring out the message more.
You know what the best advice I ever heard on songwriting was? I'm going to give you a little gem.
Love it.
It was write music you want to hear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so it. Like, that summed up everything that I've been wanting to do as an artist forever. It's like, if you enjoy listening to it over and over and over again, somebody else will too. Right. And if you don't enjoy listening to it over and over, you can't expect someone else to.
Right.
So it's kind of this weird, like, thing. Like, yeah, you're the one that is creating the music and driving the bus. The funny thing about that, the reason I bring it up, is never lose sight of that. Mm-hmm. Because this record, this new record I'm making, some of the songs are 20 years old.
Wow.
And they're old piano songs. That's, you know, I actually emailed Sarah because she knows me as a guitar man. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I said, hey, this new record, I'm actually playing piano, you know, like, because I've always played piano as the first instrument. And it's like, I've never documented enough songs. I've always done like maybe one song on piano here and there. But it's like, I went back and went through all these piano songs. I'm like, I need to document these and make band arrangements and do that. But I wouldn't have done that if, A, I didn't look back on my career and value all those old songs and not think they were outdated or think they were at a different time in my life. The second thing is also, I wanted to hear them.
Yeah.
So never lose sight of that. Always write music you want to hear.
Yeah.
Seal it with a high five. You're going to play us another song. What are you going to play us next?
I am. It's actually the song that I'm releasing. It's called Falling.
Awesome. And it's a live debut performance.
It is. I love that.
We love that here.
Yeah, it's about the free fall and being okay with it and knowing that there's actually nothing terrifying when you're falling.
Love it. Let's hear it.
All right. Thank you.
very nice. Woo! I got to give you a huge compliment. Huge compliment.
Oh, thanks.
So some of my favorite music is acoustic pop.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I started writing. It's what I always come back to it. And it kind of like, it's in the limelight, and then it kind of veers off, and then it comes back. And I've mm-hmm. seen this in every decade. And you have written such a great acoustic pop song.
Thank you. It's so
radio friendly. It's just well crafted. I like that you went through the process that you did, because what you came out with is awesome. It's fire. It's fire.
Thank you so much.
So real quick, before we sign off, tell everybody where they can find you, where you'll be playing next, where people can find you on the socials.
So you can find me pretty much everywhere, even my website at Cat Ivy Music.
Spell it out, because people are dumb.
CatIvyMusic. Also, cat like the animal, ivy like the plant, music, because that's what I do.
Nice and slogan. I like
thank
it.
Thank you. I got it playing a carnival.
That was good.
Thank you.
That's good. You got the whole thing down. It's nice. And what about social media? Is it all on there?
Yep, Cat Ivy Music.
Are you on Facebook, Instagram?
Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok.
Oh, you're on all of them.
I don't really use TikTok.
And your release is February 14th?
February 14th.
And the song is Fallen.
Fallen.
Awesome. Kat, you're going to have to come back in about 9 or 10 months and keep us updated with everything you're doing.
I'd love to.
Proud of you.
Thank you. Seriously.
High five. All right. On behalf of Ronan, who's sitting in the other room, Eddie Pence and myself, we'll see you guys here next week.